F2. Number 19A.
Yes. Well, that's, then we could take the law. And I think I would like once to go through what I have written here, because though it's only an example, but I would like perhaps to point out one or the other thing which in this law may not be so easy. So I took the elements on page 129, you see. I tried to formulate it. You know, I don't mind if after 10 or 20 years it is found out that these laws are not quite exact. That doesn't matter. We are always on the go. We can never do something which is final. Mrs. Eddy began to write her textbook, and it wasn't final, but she began and wrote it. And what a good thing it was that she did write it. If we want to wait until a subject is perfect so that it can stand eternity, we will never write a single sentence. We can never go ahead. So I am quite aware that I have written here is the first trial. Can you say trial? No, the first attempt. You see, the first attempt to systematize this Christianity in a way. And that's why I tried to give the text of the epistles, you see, and prove it from the text of the epistle where I got it and how I got it, so that I have some authority behind my back, so that I can say I didn't invent these laws. I didn't invent it. I took them out of the text. But naturally our sense, our spiritual sense, and especially our scientific sense, I hope will grow. I hope very much will grow. So that perhaps after 10 years or after 20 years, we will feel, well, that what we did there wasn't so quite to the point. But that doesn't matter. We must not be afraid to study something and to give our heart to something which isn't yet 100%, or we will never go anywhere. So let's just love these laws. The only thing I can say, I have pondered them. I haven't just written them down. I have gone over them day in and day out, over months and over years. So it isn't just writing down something to have a summer school. So perhaps just take them first as if they were really top. But if we will find out once that they are not quite 100%, we are not going to lose any tears about it. We are just going to be happy about it. That's the idea and fall. But for the moment, I'm quite sure that it is helpful and that it brings some order and some basis and firmness within one's consciousness. So here the elements are that by claiming, this claiming, the A-B, we have to claim it. By claiming our conscious unity with the perfect idea man, we manifest on the human plane a higher standard of manhood. The first will always be that we have to claim it in the human. You see, it's something which we have to do consciously, actively. We can't do that in bed before we go to sleep. See, it's a law that is going on as we live. So we manifest on the human plane a higher standard of manhood. We begin to demonstrate the Son of Man. Now, coming back to what I said before, it's now over 10 years that I saw the structure of the Christian Science textbook. It's already 10 years now, or over 10 years. And after 10 years, I haven't found a flaw in it yet. Still there. It may change. We may see something more definite. We may see some more categories in it. We may see this and that in it. But it still holds good, even after 10 years. So, because the text in the textbook is clear, you see, it's not so veiled in symbolism as in the Bible, and therefore is much more to the point there a word means much more what the word says than in the Bible. In the Bible, a word doesn't mean what it says. It's a symbolism of something which it wants to say. Therefore, the Bible language is always more, inexact or not so definite, not so conclusive. You see the terminology as in the textbook. But today I haven't seen yet any major or minor mistake in that whole structure. So I think we can be pretty happy about how science precipitates itself on us these years. So let's see how we could elaborate this law. I've taken mind here. I just want to point out one or the other thing, you see. Therefore we can see what happens in reality is that by claiming our conscious unity with men as the idea of the intelligence of mind. See, we saw in Colossians that man is the idea of God. It's therefore the idea of intelligence, of the intelligence of mind. But if we claim that, you see, if we claim that on the human plane of existence, it always translates itself to the human as something else, translates itself here, we manifest on the human plane a greater sense, say, of wisdom, or a greater ability of immortal mind reading, or of greater vision, or of a more acute spiritual perceptibility. You see, the intelligence of mind, which is the absolute concept of the idea of mind, as the infinite intelligence, well, that idea translated on the human plane manifests itself, for instance, as wisdom, or as light, or as vision, or as a greater insight, as a better sense of perceiving and comprehending the idea. See, it's not a fullness of intelligence that is manifested at once, or that would be the end of the Christianity order. Here it is the translated sense. It comes to us as light. That intelligence comes to us, that we begin to see the light in a certain way. That we begin to see more light in a specific case. It's not intelligence as a whole idea, you see. Is that clear? Clear. It's a translated sense. It's a translated sense. All right. Try to show it, say, through the idea order. See, if we claim our conscious unity with men as the idea of the order of spirit, see, then that translates itself to the human plane as, say, spiritual birth, because spiritual birth is an order process, as a natural unfoldment. See, that's order. As a frictionless progress in something, in an affair, in anything, you see, a natural frictionless process. That order, but translated to the human plane, as an ever falling away of all that does not belong to the divine nature in us, you see, because spirit is that which separates, the order of spirit always separates. Well, that manifests in us that little by little something falls away from us which doesn't belong really to our true nature. So you have certainly experienced that you would say to me, or I have it actually heard this week, you would say to me, well, since I have begun to see that spirit is order, and what order in spiritual things means, and I've begun to see the beauty of it and the holiness of it, you see, I began to have a more ordered life, or I began to have more order in my household, or in my daily actions. See, it translates itself. We don't have to translate itself. See, that again we must see, it translates itself. our unity with the absolute idea of order, if we love that, if we claim that, if we just see the beauty of it, the holiness of it, the greatness of it, and everything like that, well, we fill consciousness with that sense of order. And the more we fill that day in and day out, that has in itself the Christ. We don't have to translate. We just can't help but begin to be more ordered in our thinking. More ordered in the household, more ordered in the business, more ordered in our study, more ordered in this, more ordered in that. Isn't that so? See, why is that so? That's because there is a Christ, that mystery. Paul always calls that Christ translation the mystery which he has uncovered. Because we can't do it. It does it with us. It does it with us. So, let's just take another one just to get into the rhythm of it. I took as soul the idea of rule, for instance. You know, the idea of soul is rule. So by claiming our conscious unity with men as the idea of the rule of soul, that man is really the idea of soul, the rule of soul. Well, that manifests itself on the human plane if we claim that rule of soul. It manifests itself, say, on the human plane as balance, a sense of life, as more stability. Because if you have your rules, you have more stability. As more stability, as more poise, you see. These are all ideas of soul, but all translated on the human plane. As more dignity and nobility, you see. Somebody who has a regulated life, can you say that, a regulated life? a life of rule, of divine rule. Well, he expresses more dignity, more poise, more balance, you see. Not up and down. He expresses more meekness and more humility. You see, only that one goes up in the air and is cast down who has not that rule of soul in himself, that identification with soul. Because soul, if we are identified with soul, nothing moves us. So we express a life and a standard which is poised, which is has a measure of stability in it, has a measure of dignity in it, of being unmoved, of not going up the wall and down into the ditch. It just stays on the level. Or you take, say, the idea of system. Well, the more we claim that man is really nothing else but the idea of a metaphysical system, the idea of principle as a metaphysical system, and begin to see that that is man, well, the more we perceive that, and the more we claim that, and the more we value that, and the more we adore that, well, that has an effect within ourselves. It manifests on the human plane. It should manifest itself as a better sense how to organize things. Even to organize things, you see? Because organization is just the human concept of the divine system. If you take the definition of organization, the definition of system is practically the same. The difference is that organization has a human origin, whereas system has a divine origin. So if we understand more about the true system, we organize better. That's quite true. And therefore it manifests itself also better in the organs, in the organization of the body, you see, because the whole body is nothing else but the counterfeit of that system. So it has that counterfeit to raise itself to a higher level. Therefore it manifests itself better as a better organic activity. Organic activity, organic in the body, organic in social things, organic in political things, in political body, you see, it's all the same. The more we see system, that precipitates itself on the human plane as better organization in every way, or of a better sense of interdependence on the human plane and better interrelationships, because system is nothing else but interrelationships of ideas, all bound together by bands, ministering to each other, you see. Translated, it translates itself that we just get a better sense of interrelationship and relationship and of unified activity among us. Okay, I just go through these just to see how the ideas of God translate themselves without going out of the realm of their synonymous term, you see. System is an idea of principles. Well, relationship is an idea of principles. So system translates itself always as right relationships. Right relationships in what? On all levels of thought. On all levels of thought. Because there is only one God. And when we begin to see that the levels of thought are divine signs, absolute Christian signs and Christian signs, then we really see that translation reaches every plane. The Christ, the divine manifestation, which comes to the flesh, even down to the flesh, you see, and has its impact on that level, even there. It isn't just up there. Now, the Thessalonians always thought it's up there, and it doesn't matter what we do down here. They had two universes, they had various levels. Now, in Christian science, Mrs. Eddy has found out that wonderful marvel, which you don't find in any other metaphysical system, as far as I have seen them, that she could categorize being, you see, in those wonderful levels of divine science, absolute Christian science, and then Christian science. And showing that all those three levels are signs, binding them together as signs, as the oneness of being, but touching every level of being. That's why it is a savior. That's why she could say divine science is a comforter. Well, we only need a comforter when it can touch the lowest level of being, lowest level of existence, or else it's not a comforter. So, we can take another one, like life, and take the idea, say, of individuality, and see, well, life is that enormous individuality, that undividedness of being. Well, if we claim our conscious unity with the idea man as individuality, see, that man is, that the idea of man is expressing true individuality, undividedness from life. Well, if we claim that for us, claim that we are undivided from life, well, that manifests itself even on the human plane. And it may manifest itself in a higher degree of individuality in the human, a higher degree of indivisibility in the human, where we more and more feel we are one with that one life. It may manifest itself, that undividedness, as a closer adherence to the way of life. That we suddenly begin to feel more and more, I just can't help but be closer, going closer and closer with the way of life, with the great word of life, or as a greater sense of being a pioneer. See, if we really see true individuality, each one of us will be in the human a greater pioneer. I don't know if you can see that. For me, it's quite clear, you see, because a pioneer is that one which goes closer and closer to the unity with God. And going closer and closer to the unity of God always brings up new vision, brings up a new concept, brings up something new, and that's a pioneer, you see. But it's only because he goes closer to God. He has his undividedness closer with God. So you can say, well, how can I be a pioneer? And each one has to be a pioneer, or he doesn't fulfill his manhood. Well, it can only be, as he shows in Thessalonians, if you are one, in consciousness and claim really that really we can only be one with life, with that one word of life, with that eternal highway of life, that highway of life which just goes into eternity and therefore to the climax and pinnacle of being, therefore we can't help but be pushed in that direction. And being pushed in that direction, we will always tread on new ground, on newer ground, and therefore be a pioneer. Perhaps at this point I could read a passage from Mrs. Eddy's article, Waymarks in Retrospection, which shows how she saw, you see, that there must be a development in consciousness from the time of Jesus up to our time, in so far that she could see that the age of science has come, where we have to consider these Bible stories, metaphysics, much more as a system than as isolated truths. She says, in the first century of the Christian era, Jesus went about doing good. The evangelists of those days wandered about. Then she says, but the ideal of God is no longer impersonated as a waif or wanderer. And truth is not fragmentary, disconnected, unsystematic, but concentrated and immovably fixed in principle. The best spiritual type of Christianly method for uplifting human thought and imparting divine truth is stationary power, stillness, and strength. And when this spiritual ideal is made our own, it becomes the model for human action. See, she touches here on perhaps what we have just gone through, that as in retrospection, the article Waymarks, I don't know which page it is, and it just points out in these few lines some points. You see, first of all, that we are living in an age where we can't be any more satisfied with fragmentary, disconnected, unsystematic truth. Our time is over. And says, but the time that is here is but where these truths must be concentrated and immovably fixed in principle. You see, and then also you see another point which she points out, that really in order to do the most good, these concentrated, systematic and firmly fixed truths in principle must be pondered within ourselves with a sense of stationary power. See, I think if you sit down and just ponder these laws, going through them, through the seven, that's I think what she meant by stationary power. You just fix and base and rest yourself in that power of God, in that new gospel, you know. It's the gospel, that gospel which Paul defines, the power of God unto everyone that believeth. Now, if under believers we understand that whole matrix sense of being immovably fixed in our consciousness with principle in every classification, then I think we express that stationary power, that stillness really, where we are inwardly still and just only are engaged in contemplating the ideas of God, that stillness and strength. And then she says, when we do that this spiritual ideal, when it is made our own, it becomes a model for human action. is to First Thessalonians. It becomes a model which really elevates the standard of human action. Now we come to the second epistle to the Thessalonians. Paul writes them back because he saw that they didn't take the first letter to them earnestly enough. In his first letter to the Thessalonians, he told them what to do and how to do it, and that they have to bring it down right to where they are, to their daily life, and hold and base themselves on this idea that man is perfect before God. But apparently they didn't persevere in that attitude. So he had to write them a new epistle in which he lays more stress on the ABC, where he said it isn't enough that you claim it, but you have also to stand by it through hell and high water. You just can't give in. And so in this second epistle, the stress is on that sense of persevering, you see, in that attitude until he wins a victory. You see, the tone of C is always that we remain steadfast and immovable and unwaveringly, and that brings the victory, that turns out the triumph. And so he says, you will only win the triumph of the true idea man if you really stick to that true idea man, whatever may come. He says, now we beseech you, brethren, by the coming of our Lord Jesus Christ, and by our gathering together unto him, that ye be not shaken in mind. See, that's the sea. That ye be not shaken in mind, nor be troubled. See, you get that sea. As that the day of Christ is at hand. They really speculated too much. They speculate, well, it will only be another month or another year, and then the second coming of the Christ will be a fact, and then we are all rid of all our troubles. Apparently they just spent a good time, spending all their money, you know, no more working, just saying, what's the use of it? Christ will take us anyway up into heaven, and then we have perfection. So he had to teach them that doctrine of the second coming of the Christ is right, but that it meant something very different from what they thought it would mean. He had to teach them that day of Christ was really a day of Christ, and not just a time concept, not just a speculation on a doctrine which says, if I become a member of this and this church organization, then I have all the protection and all the blessings of that church. That's the speculation. He shows, no, you have not become now Christians, and because Christianity teaches of that second coming of the Christ, of paradise, where you are lifted up into perfection, that isn't a speculation. That is an inward state of consciousness, and you have to work it out.